Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome back to the Back Row Super Show.
Yeah, this is the main show. This is episode 22.
Yep.
I don't have a punchy tagline for the music stuff.
Oh, really?
I think it should stand on its own.
Okay. Well, what are we doing?
So we're discussing David Bowie's Black Star. His last album released while he was living. I'm going to try not to get choked up during this episode because Bowie is probably one of my top three favorite musicians. And probably top four or five.
Yeah.
Three of them are dead now. So,
So this was a topic that you actually picked.
Yes.
I'm not too diverse in music. So it was really interesting. I've listened to Bowie before, but mainly his, like, top hits.
Yeah, stuff that they play on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was actually really interesting for me to go and listen to something I hadn't listened before. So this is a fresh take from my perspective. From Zach's perspective, you've probably have had years to sort of digest this.
Yeah, and I will say one of the things about Bowie's releases is he has, like everyone who does a whole lot of stuff themselves and is kind of an auteur, he has some hits and misses on his albums.
Yeah, I mean, they all can't be winners.
They can't. I feel like, you know, this is a shorter album. There's only seven tracks.
Yeah.
I feel like all of them are strong.
They are. And I was kind of amazed at how small the album was. Because when you told me that I should listen to it, I was like, okay. And I actually listened to it the entire thing in a ride to work.
Either
says that the album's really short or my commute to work is really long.
Well, so this is a full length. It'll fit on a single LP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I want to say it's around 40 minutes or so. So your commute may be too long.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Atlanta.
Yeah. Welcome to A-Town. But yeah, I guess some background on this album is that it came out January 8th of 2016.
Cool.
Bowie actually died on January 10th.
Wow.
Yeah. So there was no indication in the press that he was sick, as far as I understand. I mean, you know, he was getting up there. Mm-hmm. He was in his 60s.
Yeah.
But, you know, you would think, you know, Leonard Cohen, another one of my favorites, he passed in his, I think, late 80s.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect another 15, 20 years of output.
Yeah, with that whole, like, rocker lifestyle, it does age you pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, he had a pretty debilitating cocaine problem.
Yeah.
You know, Lou Reed, the other one of my favorites, he died from liver cancer after getting a liver transplant.
Oh, gosh.
Or it may have been liver failure instead of cancer. But I know he had a liver transplant, and it was one of the reasons that he died. And he also lived a hard lifestyle.
Yeah.
Heroin was his thing. Surprisingly, Iggy Pop is one of my favorites that is still alive.
Yeah.
Iggy Pop, you know, would cut himself on stage. I kind of get the feeling that he's as surprised as everyone else that he's still alive, as well. So Tony Visconti was the producer of this album along with Bowie.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. Was there like a label or a record company with this affiliated? Or
I'm not sure which company he was with. Mm-hmm. I know that so Tony Visconti has been his longtime producer.
Mm-hmm.
When Bowie was doing his Ziggy Stardust persona in the 70s, Tony Visconti, I think he was the bass player in his backing band, and they just kind of meshed in terms of production styling.
Well, cool.
But he's referred to it as Bowie's swan song and kind of a parting gift for his fans. So, you know, Bowie and Visconti both knew that he was on his way out.
Yeah.
Which really comes through in some of the lyrics. It's also And this is just background stuff before we get into listening to their songs or kind of going through songs.
Yeah, because I assume since this is our first time covering an album, we'll probably go song by song.
Yeah, because there's only seven and it wouldn't take very long.
Yeah.
So it's the only Bowie album to top the Billboard 200 in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
And also the Grammys that it won the year that it was released was Best Alternative, Best Engineered, Non-Classical, Best Recording Package, and then the title single won Best Rock Performance and Best Rock Song. And that would be the Black Star.
Nice.
Part of me wonders how much of that's related to his death.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, the day that he died, just for curiosity's sake, you know, I went on to Amazon and CD Baby. They were sold out of all of his stuff, which happens whenever an artist passes. Like, it happened with Whitney Houston.
Yes. Oh, man, that's...
Yeah. and Michael Jackson. Right? Yeah. Anyone who is kind of in the public consciousness for a long period of time, that always happens. So part of me can't help but think that he won those Grammys and got the airplay because he died, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, because it really does have the merit to sort of stand on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and you know, the backing band for this, Bowie wasn't one to really use a whole lot of synthetic instruments like he has on a couple of albums. This time he used a live backing band. It's Danny McCaslin and a couple of jazz musicians that he heard in a jazz club in New York.
Nice.
You know,
because I will say one of the things that that really stood out besides the lyrics and David Bowie singing, there was some epic, like, sax music in there that, like, really is grooving.
So, a lot of that sax was actually played by Bowie.
Oh,
that
really?
That was his original instrument.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
wow.
A lot of that is Bowie. Some of it was re-recorded by the jazz musicians, because probably towards the end of the recording session, he was probably losing his ability to really put out the amount of air that you would need to do some of the things that he was playing.
Wow.
Yeah,
I did not know that he played sax.
Yeah, well, and I know that you listen to a little bit more hip-hop. Mm-hmm. This album was heavily inspired by quote-unquote new hip-hop. Apparently Kendrick Lamar and Death Grips.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar's second album and I think Death Grips' third album, according to Visconti, were kind of like non-stop repeat for Bowie up to these recording sessions.
Oh, wow.
So he drew a lot of inspiration from that.
Yeah, because you can definitely feel that kind of vibe in there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just that kind of beat and that rhythm.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, some of the songs sound like things that... It wasn't released at this time, I don't think, but, you know, Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly album was out, and then he released, I think, like a year or two later, so after this was released, he released I want to say it's like a 9 or 10 track album of outtakes, and none of the songs are titled, they're just tracks that he just couldn't do anything with, but they all have this, like, 70s, 80s, like, funk feel. And I think that comes through. It's funny, I guess, artists get in the same shared, like, headspace. Not to sound too cliche or whatever, but, like, even if they don't work together, they can kind of vibe off each other.
And yeah.
Kind of hit similar sounds.
Yeah, because, I mean, as an artist, if you're listening to somebody else's music, that definitely has an influence on your music.
Yeah.
As well, especially when you're really feeling it and you're kind of listening to it daily. I feel that would definitely have an influence over you.
Yeah. But the band that he used for this album, according to the band leader, McCaslin, they were completely unaware that Bowie was even sick.
Wow.
He was in the studio 11 to 4 every day during their recording sessions. Jeez. and just cranking out stuff and getting in there and experimenting and rearranging. And really using the studio as an instrument, mm-hmm. which takes a different type of artist.
Yeah. And I did not know that Bowie had passed just, you know, days after the release until you told me. Because when I was listening to it, I was thinking, wow, this, you know, this is Bowie at his peak. This is, you know.
It is. I feel like it's, God, 45, 50 years worth of recording career kind of all distilled down into the best at mm-hmm. the very last.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, that's at least the background that I have on it. Did you want to go track by track?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I think that would be a good sort of setup to when we do musical things.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Yeah, we'll just keep on with that format then.
Mm-hmm.
So track one is there's not a name for it. It's a symbol. It's Black Star.
Yeah. I think, because I listened to it on Spotify.
Yeah.
And it was called Black Star.
Yeah, so on the actual album,
it has those symbols, arrows that point up and left.
Yeah, it's just got the symbol mm-hmm. for it. Cool. So this track is just shy of 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The original cut of it, which I don't think you can find anywhere unless it's on some random outtake somewhere that I'm unaware of.
Yeah.
Is like 10 and a half minutes long.
Okay.
And it was trimmed solely for the purpose of getting it as a single on iTunes, because iTunes will not publish a single that's longer than like 9 minutes and 58 seconds.
So wow.
It's right at the end.
Yeah.
It's very sci-fi-ish.
It is.
It's a kind of a callback to his earlier career, I think. Like,
yeah.
Because, you know, like, he got popular with the Ziggy Stardust thing. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing with Ziggy Stardust, for anyone who doesn't know, I don't know if you know or not, but Ziggy Stardust was a persona that he used. That mm-hmm. The story behind it was that he was the space alien that had been stranded on Earth.
Yeah.
And
that was sort of like a rock ballad where it was telling a story.
Right.
Yeah. And listening to this first track, I kind of geared myself into saying, oh, this is going to be another rock ballad where it's going to, like, tell a story over these couple of tracks, which it does, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely does. It's very two-tone.
Mm-hmm.
I would almost go so far as to say it sounds like no wave,
okay.
Which is just kind of just shy of noise.
Yeah.
The thing that stood out to me, because I play drums, is that two things involving the drums, really, is that the synth drums that they used
mm-hmm.
were so saturated that they sounded wet. I don't know if you picked up on that.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of weird time signatures in it. I was counting and kind of following along and tapping on my leg, and there are some parts of this song that are in 14/8.
That is strange.
Which is,
I mean,
really weird.
Yeah. And I guess for people who don't know, we both used to play instruments.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were actually in a band together, so yeah. We have some sort of, I have a very minimalistic, I guess, knowledge of, like, technical music, where you have more of the, like, technical music background.
Yeah.
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 Where you can figure out these times. Like, I wouldn't be able to figure out that it was, like...
Yeah, well, yeah. Like, playing drums is just figuring out time.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I really liked the kind of free jazz sax squawks that were in
gosh.
It.
Gosh, I really enjoyed that, too, because that was one of the things, like I said, that hit me the most was just those sax-like melodies and solos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and you know, there's this weird R&B section, mm-hmm. like 3-4 minutes in.
Yeah.
It almost, to me, sounds like a pop ballad.
Kind of.
It kind of sounds like some of the stuff that he was putting out kind of in the mid to late 80s almost.
Yeah.
Have you taken the time to like watch the video for this?
I have not. Like I said, I listened to it on Spotify, so.
So after this, we should watch the video if you're interested. It's amazing.
And the viewers can also watch we recommend watching the video.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes to the YouTube, the official YouTube channel, Vimeo. It's amazing. There are these dancers. There's a bunch of weird sci-fi imagery. Kind of dark fantasy-ish.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of what I got was he was trying to tell a story in that particular track. Now, what do you think the story was from your perspective?
Of this song?
Yeah.
So the song to me kind of struck me kind of like I've been saying, like a sci-fi, like dark fantasy thing where there's this rundown village and this figure that comes back and has a return to power.
Yeah. Right?
Well, which is interesting because it's the first track on the album and, you know, he hasn't put out anything in several years.
Yeah. It's just sort of a call to his,
his fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like I said before, there's gradual tempo shifts in this. And like I said earlier, it kind of sounds like Kendrick Lamar's untitled funk jazz release. This track to me is the one where I hear Kendrick's influence the most.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
On that, especially with some of the you know, free jazz stylings on here.
Yep.
He kind of, like I said, he used this studio kind of as its own instrument for this because I don't know how Spotify plays tracks. Like, if they put definite breaks in between songs.
No, it goes on to the
next one.
So
you got the soft, flow. Easy fade into the next song. So
Which is really nice.
Well, yeah, and I was wondering if that was kind of like a metaphor for death. Like, it's just kind of a smooth transition right into
I didn't think about that song. But yeah.
Because, like, towards that end, digging back into my music history and theory from college, there's almost like this Gregorian monk type feel with it, with the two tones.
Yeah.
And it almost sounded like funeral music or like a dirge.
It did. I felt like, so with the singing and everything, it was his like style, but it was a lot softer.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see the similarities to, you know, like a chant.
Yeah. And did you have anything else to say about this track?
No.
Okay. Because I feel like I'm throwing a lot of stuff in there, and I don't want you to feel like I'm just like, okay, let's move on to the next.
No. This is all you. I mean, like I said, I'm just giving my initial impressions since I just listened to it.
Okay.
You've had a lot of time to sort of, like, process it. And
sure.
Like, you know. So, yeah. Go for it.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, so the next track is "Tis a Pity She Was a Whore."
Yes.
It's kind of a jazz funk. It sounds like, again, his voice from the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. The track on here sounds a lot like... if I had to, like, depending on the section of the song, it sounds like, the way he sounded for the Labyrinth soundtrack.
Yeah, I could definitely feel that, like, there's definitely an upbeat vibe, like...
Yeah, it's more forward in the mix, I guess.
Where the first one was kind of, like... a nice leveled area. This one kind of shoots up a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and in other sections, it kind of sounds like Earthling, which was an album that came out in early 2000s that not very many people liked. It was such a huge departure. Like, I don't think there were any singles that charted.
I've never heard of it.
In the lyrics, one of the things I notice is that regret is a major theme.
Yeah, because she ends up, like, going with someone else. Yeah. And he's regretful for that.
Yeah, which it's funny now. Like, I don't know if it's post-mortem putting meaning onto this album.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, it regret is a major theme on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is one of the stronger tracks where the sax work really stands out.
Yeah, and I feel that there's deeper meaning in the song. I just, at this moment, can't, you know, process. Like, if I dug a little bit deeper, I could probably find out. But yeah, it feels like there's a lot more to the song than just what's on the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's true of every track on this album, I think. Like, and, you know, over his career, he puts so much out with like, different layers of meaning.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you're just listening to it the first time, it's really a good song, too. You can really, listen to it, and it gets you thinking a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, having a song that's thought-provoking is definitely a really good quality. And when it's thought-provoking and you can kind of groove with it, that's even better.
Exactly. Yeah. With the third track, Lazarus,
mm-hmm.
hands down my favorite. It's spacey. It's definitely a newer sound for him.
Yeah.
The horns in this kind of play like a dirge. There's this funeral.
Yeah, pace. I really enjoyed the brass. It was really like, it was interesting because it's definitely it compares well with the sax, but it definitely puts its own spin on the whole jazz feel.
Yeah, and you know, like this track sounds like someone preparing for death.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean,
you know, coming to terms, kind of, you know, giving up earthly attachments.
Yeah, because Lazarus is a biblical figure.
Yeah, Lazarus is the. I'm rusty on. Lazarus is the guy that died and came back?
Yes.
And the only reason I know that is because of the Lazarus pits in Batman.
There you go. yes, he died and came back, but he was never quite the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This song, the lyrics, they're sad, but they kind of sound like someone at peace, too. I kind of got the vibe that he may have been contemplating suicide when he was writing this song.
Wow.
I
did not get that vibe.
No?
No. Yeah. I mean, I got the death vibe, but I didn't get, like, contemplating suicide. But yeah, maybe I need to give it another listen.
Well, yeah, because there's lines here that I wrote down that made me think of that.
Mm-hmm.
This way or no way, you know I'll be free. To me, sounds like someone who's, you know, going, okay, I'm so close to death. you know, can I take this step rather than being pushed?
Yeah.
You know? Again, this is another track where the video is amazing and a work of art.
Oh, wow.
How
many videos?
I think that there were three. Okay. I think that, so Black Star, I don't think had him in it.
Mm-hmm.
Lazarus does have him in it a lot.
Okay.
And I think Sue had a video.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it was animated because Sue was, I think, was the second album or second single from this album, and
because that's probably my favorite track.
Okay, let's go into it.
Because that
covers Lazarus.
Okay.
Again,
it was just sort of like the tempo of Sue and
the
beat is a higher, more like, I guess, more energy.
It's definitely quicker. It's more fast paced. Mm-hmm. It's such a dizzying transition from the last track, because this is another track where Lazarus, just like Black Star, kind of transitioned into Tis a Pity. Lazarus transitions and just kind of slides into Sue.
Yeah, where at the very end of Lazarus, there's kind of like a ticking, like,
yeah, and then beat it just that kicks off.
Yeah, that sort of like starts off the time, and then it goes straight into Sue. Yeah,
yeah, and the stereo manipulation for me makes this sound so dizzying, because like I was listening to it while I was taking these notes. With headphones on my iPod, and it's just like the way that he did the stereo balance, it's like I'm glad I was sitting down, because if I were like walking around in the kitchen or something,
yeah,
it would have been like a, oh god, I'm gonna fall.
Yeah, I think there were like it's Sue parentheses something else, right?
Yeah, it's Sue or in a season of crime,
or yeah, season of crime. Interesting.
And to me, it sounds like it's from a bad spy movie.
Yeah.
but like one from the 80s, as written by another one of his personas, the Thin White Duke,
yeah,
which was kind of when he was in his like cocaine phase. And so,
yeah.
Yeah. I have a note here that the lyrics seem to be forcing a connection where there is none. Like the narrator, quote unquote, for the song is trying to force a connection with the subject of the song, and there's really no
relationship there. Felt like there's a story moment, but I couldn't fully grasp that story moment. I would probably need another listen to it.
Oh, sure.
Or if you're saying that it's being forced, then it might just be
It's like he's just kind of making up something where there isn't anything there. And as the songwriter, like, him being aware of that.
Yeah.
Like, it's an intentional choice.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else to say about Sue since it was...
No, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed, like I said, the tempo. It brings in that great sax again.
Yeah.
A lot of the jazz and just having, like, that quick sort of beat. And then the whole lyrics, like... When he's singing, it does kind of get into that spoken word sort of sing-song style.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. I mean, and that's sort of what set him apart and made him unique.
Yeah.
Was just his voice, the sound of his voice, and just different ways that he can manipulate his voice.
Yeah.
And, again, I thought this was, or my personal belief was that this was Bowie at his greatest.
Okay, so yeah. This was your favorite from the album. Or you're saying this album was him at his greatest.
I think, because I thought, like, I didn't know that he was sick, or he was, you know, in the throes of death. So I thought this was just something that, like, matched his Ziggy Stardust.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, so the next track, there's no transition for this one. It just kind of cuts right into it.
Mm-hmm.
Girl Loves Me. Yeah. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this because I can't really parse it. I got the feeling that while writing this, that there was kind of a realization of lost time. You know, going back to that you know, his impending death, regret, and you know, just like I said, lost time being at the forefront of his mind writing these songs. It seemed like a meditation on kind of the fleetingness of existence, if that makes sense. The lyrics, the reason that I can't parse this as well is that the lyrics were written in a combination of Polari and Nadsat. Nadsat is the kind of... It's from Clockwork Orange. It's what Alex Burgess came up with for his characters to speak in that book.
Oh.
So it's a mix of Russian and then English slang. And by English, I mean, you know, not English as a language, but English culturally has a certain set of colloquialisms.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of it's written in a combination of Natsat. Polari is, from what I could see online, it's a form of slang spoken specifically by people in kind of the underground gay subculture of London from the 60s and 70s.
That's weird.
And, you know, that was his scene. Like, yeah. That was where he kind of made his start.
Yeah, where he got his name. Playing in those types
of clubs. And so, you know, it's not unrealistic to be like, okay, yeah, he's, like, all of this album to me, I don't want to sound like a red string guy or anything, but like...
But it's callbacks.
But it's callbacks and it's meditations on, you know, 40, 50 years of a recording career.
And with most artists, that's what they do is, you know, they put themselves into their music.
Yeah.
So of course it's going to like sort of call back to these particular places or ideas or feelings that they had.
Yeah.
Like, that's the great thing about music, is you can listen to a particular artist and sort of get what they were feeling at that instant.
Yeah.
Which, you know, makes music such a great medium, because you can sort of share feelings like that.
Yeah.
At least that's how I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So next track is track six. We're winding up on the end. Dollar Days.
Dollar Days.
This to me sounded like mid to late 90s, like R&B. Mm-hmm. Like it had kind of that like down tempo kind of quad,
sort of a smoother kind of feel to it.
Yeah, yeah. And this is another song that the message that I got from it was, you know, nihilism, and then kind of a jaded frustration.
Yeah.
Just kind of like a being bored with existence.
Yeah.
And it's another song that to me hints of suicide. He makes reference to English evergreens, and those are hanging places. Like those are where you would go if you were hanging yourself.
I did not know that. See, hence why I didn't get all of this like imagery of suicide.
Yeah.
I thought it was just more of like him being tired of this whole money and lifestyle and sort of...
Yeah.
I felt it more as a self-reflection on what he has become with this being, like, monetary sort of...
Yeah. Stuff. Yeah, I mean, and that's accurate. Like, that's definitely... Like, my idea of these songs being... meditations on suicide could be completely unfounded.
No, I mean, and that's the cool thing is like everybody can sort of take their own like idea, and we're not like deviating too far from the plot.
It's because like... I mean, it's definitely there. Like someone who's dying, like I feel like you can't help but think that if someone knows that they're terminal, and they start talking about,
it's going to affect your psyche. It's going to affect your psyche and the way that you write music, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's definitely a through line of frustration and nihilism in this song particularly, I think. And then the last track, I Can't Give Everything Away, it's my second favorite.
Yeah.
This one has another transition directly from Dollar Days.
Yeah. And that title, just that title, is so telling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, especially transitioning from Dollar Days, which is just kind of this nihilistic song, whether it's a meditation on fleeting fame or if it's a meditation on
suicide.
Yeah. Transitioning from that to a song called I Can't Give Everything Away, which... By the way, the transition in this song is so good. It's such a good use of studio and like tape tricks. Like it sounds like he actually manipulated the tape that this was recorded on. It struck me as a song about accepting that he's at death's door. So we've got this journey from someone who isn't at peace with it to someone who's kind of like working through those stages, and then who's working through those stages, and then they're, you know, ready for it, ready to accept what's going to happen.
Yeah. I just, one word kind of stood out to me in this particular song, and it was his use of heaven a lot, because he kept on referencing heaven and heaven and heaven.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was a very interesting track.
Yeah, like, this is the one, I don't think he's definitely, for me at least, not talking about material goods. It sounds like advice and experience, I guess, that he wishes he could give his family or his son or grandkids, mm-hmm. and there's not enough time.
Yeah, and it could also be his fans, like, yeah. he wants to give more of his talent, but, you know, there's just not time.
There's no time.
Yeah. And you can't spend your life 24/7 just...
Oh, exactly.
You have to spend time for yourself.
Yeah.
You can't give it all away. You need some of it for yourself.
Yeah.
To make yourself, like, a whole human being.
Yeah. And this one, more than any other track on this album, like, I sound like I'm repeating myself a lot, but there's a lot of through lines in these songs, I think.
Yeah.
This one, more than any other... In the notes that I have, is that it sounds like it's an amalgamation of his career's music.
Because it's definitely got all those, like, little hints at his past musical career.
Yeah, this is a great last track. Like, it is. It would be ridiculous for this to be in the middle or at the beginning of an album. Even though it is more upbeat.
It is.
It's, like, in terms of tempo, it's not one, like, if you took the tempo that this song is in and you played different lyrics over it, like, it would kind of be a filler song, but, like, I think the words and the combination of the music and the tempo of this make it just a fantastic last track.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that this, like, I know you use Spotify. I don't really use Spotify.
That's fine.
I still burn discs to CD because, like, yeah. I have, like, and don't get me wrong, I'll make mixtapes or whatever. But, like, I think this album is a really good argument for albums as a medium. Like, listening to it from track one to track the last.
Yeah, and... I also agree. There are a lot of artists that if you listen to one of their songs just, like, randomly on a random playlist or something, you don't get the full effect. Another artist who I, you know, think of when I think of this is the Gorillaz. Their tracks lead into each other.
Yeah, especially on, like, Demon Days and Humans. Yeah. Like, those tracks just, like... Love.
You really, yeah, you're doing yourself an injustice if you don't actually listen to the entire CD in itself. But when you told me that we were doing this album, yeah, Spotify has a great thing where, again, you know, I pay for it, so there's no, like, ads or anything like that. It just flows into each other. And I definitely felt like this whole album was interconnected with each other. That's why I thought it was going to at first be a rock ballad, but it's not really a rock ballad.
No.
Yeah.
No,
like, it's different, like, concepts. It's different ideas. It doesn't focus on one single character going through a story with its ups and its downs. This is different tracks telling you different things, but collaborated all together.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this again, to me, this is just an amalgamation of everything that he's done over his career in one album, at least all the high points. And I think that he didn't really... All of his previous albums, I guess, what I'm trying to say is that all of his previous albums, he took a lot of chances on some of the tracks, which is why there were some that people were just like... Dude, what the hell are you doing? Like, you put out an album with four tracks that are 15 minutes long, and they're droning noises. And he's like, can't like everything.
Yeah, I mean, and as an artist, you have to experiment. You have to try these things to sort of grow.
Yeah,
to find what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, which again, to me, makes the argument that this is a... Kind of like like his producer Visconti was saying, is kind of a love letter to his fans of, like, okay, these are my more popular songs. I'm going to write new stuff in a style that people cling to. And so this is just a distillation of everything that he's learned, everything in his bag of tricks over 40, 50 years.
And I think this is why I really think that this is one of his strongest albums. Yeah. It's because he takes all of that knowledge and distills it into one album.
Yeah.
And it's like focused on all of his hits, basically. Yeah. So.
Yeah, so that's Black Star.
Yeah,
I don't have anything else on
this. Would
you... I highly recommend this to anyone. Like, even if you're not a huge Bowie fan... Yeah.
I think you can get behind it.
These tracks are...
I think it will definitely surprise you.
Yeah.
Like, even if this isn't your genre of music, I feel like give it a listen to, and you might be surprised. You might go, oh, wow, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Because I will say, I'm not... I really enjoy him as a musician. I haven't listened to a lot of his things. I've only listened to, like, his top hits. But this makes me want to go back and listen to some of his, like, deeper cuts.
Oh, just well, to... I have a collection I can share with you.
But I definitely recommend it, too. I think I'm going to give it another listen to just to see if I've missed anything or if I can connect some stuff now knowing all of this information.
So, check out Black Star.
So Black Star, one word, not two words.
Yeah, it's one word.
It's
actually a symbol.
Yeah.
because
Black Star is actually a rap album.
Yes.
Yeah, I had to actually look for it as Black Star. And then, you know, my weeb mind went to Black Star, the character from Soul Eater.
Which will be an upcoming episode, not the next one. But you guys should be watching it because it's, what, 51, 52 episodes?
Yeah.
So I'm watching through it now. Maybe we will all meet in the middle and you guys can actually finished it by the time we get to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again... Thank you for listening to us. We always appreciate all of our listeners.
At this point, at the time we're recording this, the last tier of the back row bracket is going on.
Yeah.
There's still a few days left. I have a pretty good idea of who the champion for 2018 is going to be.
Yeah. And this was so successful, I believe we're going to try to do it next year.
Yeah. So email us suggestions at backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
Yeah, we always love hearing from you guys.
Yeah, or shoot us a message on Facebook.
Yep.
Because we're also on Facebook. That's where we have been getting a whole lot of click-throughs and stuff.
Yeah, this is where we get most of our, like, viewers and stuff like that. And, you know, our Facebook is active. We do have an active community, so feel free to jump on there and talk to us.
So thank you for taking part. Like Stuart said, we're going to do it next year, so send us some suggestions. And I'm hoping to do kind of like a mini episode of just the results.
Yeah.
This is the first time I think I brought it up to you.
No, you've done it before. I agree wholeheartedly. I think we should spend an episode just kind of talking about what we were expecting and what actually happened.
Yeah. And at the time of recording this, there's still a week before Dragon Con.
Both of us will be going. 2 weeks. Come on.
It's hopeful.
Yeah.
It's just hopeful. Wishing.
But yes, we'll be there.
Yeah.
If you happen to see us, feel free to say hi.
Yeah, and I'm planning on, as soon as the bracket's over, I'm going to draw for the rest of the tiers and contact people to see if we can get stuff to them.
That's right,
in prizes. Person at Dragon Con, maybe we can meet up with some people and kind of hang out, or we can mail it to you, whichever.
Either or.
And maybe, you know, if you're fine... With Al, I'll ask you in the message, but if you're fine with us reading your name, and we could definitely plug something you're into. Like, that's what being a community is about, is turning other people on to things that you find cool.
Yeah, and so, again, you know, we're a very positive community.
Exactly.
We, We try to help out people and talk about things that people are interested in.
Yeah, because the world is a bad enough place without there being a podcast of two sad sacks just complaining.
Bitching about the world. Yeah. I'm sure there's plenty of podcasts like that.
Yeah, there probably are. Yeah. And not that that's wrong with that. They probably have tons of listeners, way more than us. But, it's just really fun to do this and focus on things that we like and things that really make us feel great.
Yeah, and again, we're definitely appreciating all the love that you guys are giving us, too, and the interaction that you have with all the things that we put out.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, send us an email, Backrow Super Show, Facebook, Four Separate Words, iTunes, go on Apple and subscribe. Google does not play nice. Still no response. I'm going to follow up on that.
Yeah.
Apple's fine. Yep. Our website, you can just direct download right from the website.
That's so, right.
Yep. Just right click, save as. There you go.
Exactly.
I guess next week or next regular episode will be on Doki Doki Literature Club.
Ooh.
So listen for that in a couple weeks. The next episode should be just a regular me.
Yep.
We'll just talk about stuff we've been doing.
All right, guys. See you later.
All right, bye. You'll need to rest. But now